I'm Andrea Loyan, Vermont Edition producer, and I just wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening, and enjoy!
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Today on the show, we are stepping away from the news grind and taking some space to collectively remember people that we lost in the past year. Many of us lost friends or family members. Others said goodbye to someone in their community they didn't know very well on a personal level, but who nevertheless had a deep impact on them. Throughout this hour, we're going to hear people share stories of loved ones who passed away, some at the end of a long life, others unexpectedly and far too soon. If you lost someone in 2024 and you'd like to honor them on air with us today, there are a couple ways you can do that. You can either email us a remembrance or a favorite memory to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org or call in at 800-639-2211. We got this email from John in Essex ahead of today's show. John says he's been pausing to reflect on the vast number of contributions that Chris Baker made to the communities of Essex and beyond. His passion and commitment to the growth and development of our future generations of citizens was manifest in many ways, especially as a coach of many young athletes playing basketball, soccer, and softball. Chris, your laughter still rings in my ears, John writes, as I picture your big smile every time softball season begins again. We're going to kick off today's show with a friend of Jarlath O'Neill Dunn's. He was a beloved member of the University of Vermont science community. He was the director of the Spatial Analysis Lab, and he also worked with the USDA Forest Service Research and Development. He was a former officer in the United States Marine Corps and a passionate endurance athlete. He was also a beloved husband and a father of three. He passed away suddenly on January 6th while Nordic skiing with his friends. And here to share some memories of Jarlath is one of his dear friends and colleagues, Chris Danforth, who's a math professor at UVM. Chris, welcome.
Hi, Michaela. Happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us and telling us about Jarlath. How did you first get to know one another?
Yeah, well, it's this time of year where people maybe have a harder time being outside and moving around, and maybe some folks guilt themselves into training a bit by signing up for this Vermont City Marathon that happens in May. And Jarlath was the sort of guy, he never really wanted to do that. What he wanted to do was play cowbell in Burlington's fourth most popular marathon rock band. And so he would train all spring to be able to do that in his red wig and cheer on the runners when they went through his neighborhood. So he was basically a walking Saturday Night Live skit, funny, playful. He's sorely missed, and was quite the character.
What was his role at UVM? You two worked together for years.
Yeah, you mentioned the Spatial Analysis Lab. You know, his group was really responsible for a lot of the assessment of flood damage in the last few years. He was, that group flies drones to do aerial imaging and can help with farms, making the case to the government that they should receive aid. And he was a relentless advocate for his employees at that organization. He also was an advocate for veterans. You mentioned his time in the Marines. He served in Iraq after in the Middle East. And, you know, he would every year help make sure that the university honored veterans with a lunch. And he and I, you know, we did some research together on the impact of being outside on mood and health. We looked at people's social media posts when they spent time outside, and turns out there's less negative language in their messages they share then. And we're also involved in a study trying to understand the impact of time outside on sleep. And mm-hmm. Jarlath was a big part of that too. Mm.
And his colleague Paige, who's now the director of the Spatial Analysis Lab, wrote us to say that Jarlath impacted so many people in our community and beyond with his energy and his passion for urban forests and community resilience. I wonder if you could speak to that side of Jarlath, his passion for community resilience and growing that strength here in Vermont.
Yeah, I mean, so Jarlath, he's one of these guys who he really believed that we were all a little too comfortable. And, you know, he spent a lot of time outside and encouraged people to spend time outside. He was a year-round bike commuter and had a number of events that he would organize, people to be, you know, clubs to be part of with silly names like Sciatica, the band. you know, he was the kind of person that you wanted to be around. He was not good at any of these activities, triathlon and bike racing and obstacle course racing and CrossFit. He did all these things not so much to be winning, but to show other people how strong they could be. And he really had that like big Ted Lasso servant leader kind of energy that invited people to be, you know, the best version of themselves. And he would always find things for people, like traits in people that, you know, that he was impressed by and would tell them about it. And, you know, that's so empowering when somebody who's so capable, you know, good looking guy with a beard who's strong, who can do so much, smart, you know, he tells you that, you know, he's impressed with you. Mm. And that was really empowering. So the community around him was very strong.
Mm. And when you first talked to me about Jarlath, you told me that he was the mascot for Sufferfest. That stuck with me.
Yeah. 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 He's, you know, he really liked to, you know, to spend time appreciating how much can be gained from experiences that are challenging. And I think that, you know, the conversation collectively about how to be resilient to stress and to challenges in your relationships and to work and life, you know, he really believed strongly that there was a lot of good to be found on the other side of tired, so to speak. And so he would lead efforts to get people around him to do stuff that they weren't quite sure they could do. He would invite people to, you know, go hike up under the Stowe Gondola until their legs got cramped and then, you know, kind of smile and laugh about it on the way home. Mm. As one example.
But just type two fun, really, that
yeah,
sounds like.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He was a mascot for type two fun for sure.
you spoke at his funeral earlier this year. What was that experience like for you?
Wow. It's one of the most meaningful experiences of my life. There were almost 1,000 people that filled Ira Allen Chapel, people from all over the world, really, people who served with him in the Marines, people on campus who he influenced. You know, his family was there. You know, and I think, you know, when a superhero like Jarlath, a real living legend, is taken down in his prime, it's quite unmooring for people who are kind of trying to do their best to take care of themselves, because he's really the last person you'd expect that to happen to. So to, you know, have 1,000 people on campus where, to be honest, the, you know, the currency is virtues that show up on your resume, arrive and be able to discuss, you know, has his virtues in a eulogy. And then there's an important distinction there between the resume and the eulogy. And he, you know, he had a lot of those things. He taught people that doing the right thing isn't easy, but you got to keep going. You know, there's nothing wrong with being a big, strong guy who cries sometimes. And, you know, you can become a great dad and family man over time. He cared so much about his family, his kids, his wife, Julie. And, you know, I think being given the opportunity to talk about him, it really reminded me and everyone there how important it is to prioritize time with your own family. My wife, Kate, and kids, Harper and Afton, and to face challenges with strength and vulnerability.
You must miss him so much.
Yeah, yeah, it's something I think about every day. I was just with a group of guys that we work out in the mornings. This was another famed activity of his, to be, you know, at 5 a.m. in the dark at the track here at UVM. A group he coined a lot of nicknames for things. So boy band is what he called this group. Miles Colapretti and Clarence Davis, Justin Smith, Paul Yoon, and Matt Anderson. And we spend time there a couple times a week and work through things together. And, you know, we miss him a lot.
Chris Danforth, thank you so much for helping us remember Jarlath O'Neal Dunn and the impact he had on the community here in Vermont. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for giving me a chance, Michaela.
I want to share an email from Katie in St. Albans, who wants to honor her husband's grandmother, Irene, who passed away earlier this year. Katie writes, when I first met Irene nearly 18 years ago, she welcomed me into her heart as if I were her own family. My introduction to her happened during a time when I lost my own last living grandparents in short succession. Irene was warm, kind, and funny. From day one, she insisted I call her grandma and treated me as if I'd always been her granddaughter. I will never forget the time spent sharing a snack around her dining room table, the room filled with her stories and smiles. Her legacy is one of welcoming spirit, kindness, and laughter, something we could all use more of in this world. Let's try Michael in Waitsfield again now. Michael, who are you thinking of today?
Steve Lacey. You hear me okay?
And we can, yes. Tell us about Steve.
Okay, well, he's a very interesting person. He is from England. He lived in the Mad River Valley for about 30 years. The unique thing about him was he rode his bike all year round, 12,000 miles every year. It's amazing going up and down these hills. He would go for 100-mile bike rides, mostly by himself. And three, nobody in the world was in better shape than him. Three years ago, he ended up with lung cancer, never had a cigarette in his life, but we've heard that story before. And he passed away yesterday. His last ride was around seven weeks ago. And he left his wife, Ruth. And if he wasn't riding his bike, he was taking a walk in the Mad. Everybody, single person knows him. He would never wear a helmet, and he rode all winter long, almost 100 miles a day.
Wow.
So it's interesting that you had this show today and that he just passed away yesterday. He was about the last 12 days or so at CVH and never made it out.
Oh, my gosh.
But the unique thing is there is nobody in the world, no athlete, nobody, that was in better shape than him, but there's a lot of L-U-C-K. He was 72 years old.
Oh, well, Michael, thank you so much for helping us remember Steve Lacey, who just passed away yesterday. This year, our region lost a number of people, including a number of creative people, including the poet and jazz aficionado Reuben Jackson on February 16th and the writer, beekeeper, teacher, and legislator Bill Mayers on July 29th. Both Reuben and Bill had published books through Rootstock Publishing, which is based in Montpelier, Vermont. And the head of that publishing company, Samantha Kolber, joined us on Vermont Edition this year to discuss both authors' legacies. I want to play a clip from Samantha talking about Bill Mayers. Let's take a listen.
Bill was fabulous, as you know, and it's truly just a story of his whole life. I mean, he started this, you know, with his first line is, I was born on November 8th, 1940, as Nazi bombs rained down on Coventry Cathedral during the Battle of Britain. And it goes from there. It's quite an adventure. He was born to that kind of chaotic time, and he led a chaotic life, and chaotic only in that he had so many careers and so many adventures, from crossing the Sahara Desert on a camel to photographing Richard Nixon at the, you know, convention in Chicago, and then homesteading in Vermont and creating a beautiful family and being on a state representative. So this memoir really has it all. And there are beautiful pictures because also he was a photojournalist. So there are photographs. I do want to read something that he wrote at the end, but that when I came across it, it struck me that maybe he knew this was his last opus, or maybe not, but it's so very Bill. He says, my life was not a single note in vocation or avocation. I was happy to play as many notes as I could, as long as they harmonized into a chord.
Those are the words of Bill Mayers, read by Samantha Kolber of Rootstock Publishing. We'll link to our conversation with Samantha, in which she talked about Bill and Reuben Jackson, in the show notes for today's show. Let's take another call here. We have Pam calling in from Calais. Pam, who are you thinking about today?
Hi, Michaela. I'm thinking about my dear husband, Jim O'Riordan. He passed away just last April. Mm-hmm. My kids and I miss him terribly, especially this holiday season. And I just want to, one reason I wanted to call in is poor Jim suffered from pancreatic cancer, and he only had 2 months after he found out, and just really want to push everybody, if they have a family history or anything like that, to please get tested and screened and treated as soon as you can for pancreatic cancer. It's a horrible cancer that's really underfunded, and poor Jim suffered the repercussions of that. We miss him terribly, and just want to thank everybody in our community. When he was sick and passing away, everybody was amazing. He had a standing room only service in the town hall in Calais here. He was a plumber, a local plumber, and everybody knew him as the friendly, smiley plumber that would come and take care of their problems no matter what. And just wanted to honor him and thank everybody in our community also that have helped us through this.
Oh, Pam, thank you so much for telling us about Jim. I'm so sorry for you and your children's loss. He sounds like such a key part of the community there in Calais. Let's go next to Paul in Burlington. Paul, who would you like to remember today?
I'd like to remember my friend, Dr. Thomas Clark. He grew up in Glens Falls and moved to Burlington and Colchester, where he was a practicing optician. He was a master fly tyer. And for those who know or don't know fly tying, these beautiful things used to catch Vermont trout are a work of art. And he was a master of that. He also enjoyed teaching his friends how to catch trout, especially steelhead trout, over on off Lake Ontario in the Pulaski area. He held 3 patents, and he was a master woodworker, and he also built his own fly rods. But what I liked most about him, and I think most people enjoyed, he had a very unique sense of humor. And if there was a joke that had a cymbal crash in it, he knew them. Yeah, he got a lot of giggles, and he surely will be missed.
Well, Paul, your message about Dr. Thomas Clark was echoed in our email inbox by many people who wanted to remember him, including his sister Jeannie, who wrote in part, "He was a great jokester and loved making his patients and friends laugh. His humorous Facebook page was a testament to his humor in spite of his failing health. I am missing him every day." And Christy wrote of Dr. Clark, "As a young man, he was one of the first civilians to undergo open heart surgery and knew his life was a gift. Patients followed his optometry practice from its origins in Burlington to South Burlington and then Williston. He explored every interest that caught his fancy. He tied his own fishing lures, baked pies, built canoes, made jewelry, repaired watches, played the violin, studied world religions, and practiced Tai Chi. He was an active listener and offered perspective and depth to every conversation, and he was adored by his wife and best friend. He is missed by many." Now, Vermont lost 2 titans of the state Senate this past year. Dick Sears, a Democrat representing the Bennington Senate District since 1992, and Dick Mazza, a Democrat representing Chittenden Grand Isle. He was the longest-serving member of the Senate. He started in 1985. Joining us to talk about them is their former longtime colleague in the Senate, Jane Kitchell. She retired at the end of last session after 20 years representing Caledonia as a Democrat. Jane, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, it's so good to get to talk to you again about Dick Sears and Dick Mazza. As we get to this time of year and holiday season, it's often a time of reflection. Have your former colleagues been on your mind a lot recently?
Oh, they certainly have. First of all, my decision to leave after 20 years was a hard one to make, but I have to say the loss of these 2 colleagues has certainly reminded me of how important time is and how important family is. Senator Massa, of course, very, very devoted to his family. We had lots of conversations about what went on with his family. He loved his community. He loved his store. And he asked me several times, I don't remember how many times, to nominate him to be the third member on our Senate Committee on Committees, which is a key position.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I always strongly supported him was because in the world of politics, values and integrity are so important. And in my mind, he certainly embodied all those qualities. And he did not engage in political retribution. He was incredibly fair. And no one loved the institution of the Vermont Senate more than Senator Massa.
Mm. He was also a longtime chairman of the Senate Transportation Committee, and that meant that he was a key figure in upgrading Vermont's transportation systems. That's roads, bridges, rail, and air. And as my colleague Bob Kinzel told me, his overall philosophy on deferring maintenance was the classic phrase, you can pay me something now or wait and pay me a whole lot more later. That was his argument for raising the state gas tax on the Senate floor during the 2013 session. Let's take a listen.
As most of you know, I'm not a big fan of raising taxes, but in this instance, faced with a potential loss of $56 million in federal funds, and that's one of the key topics we're talking about is the state cannot afford to leave $56 million on the table at this time. There was little choice but to raise revenues in order to maintain the progress we've been making, improving the conditions of our transportation infrastructure.
We have John in Colchester calling in to help us remember Senator Dick Massa. John, go ahead. What are your remembrances?
Hi. There's a lot of people in my town that didn't really like him. It was kind of weird, but and they always complained about prices at his store and stuff. But Ms. Kitchell was right. I mean, he loved his store and he loved his community. It was so cool that they named the road where the new rec center is in Colchester after him. And I mean, I don't know. He's not in the store anymore. I go there all the time. He's not there. He always would say hi. He'd be sweeping the floor sometimes. He was just really cool. I mean, he was real. Yeah. He wasn't like, I don't know. It was so cool. And on a side note, I didn't know Reuben Jackson died. I met him at a Burlington High School football game. Didn't know he was with BPR. He told me, we got talking about the Baltimore Ravens, and it just went, I just adored him, too. So I'm sorry that he passed away. I missed him. He was a good guy.
Oh, thank you, John, for calling in. Yes, Reuben Jackson worked for Vermont Public for a number of years as a music host here. He was a lover of jazz. And thank you for telling us about seeing Dick Massa in his general store there in Colchester. Did he used to talk about that side of his life with you, Jane?
Oh, absolutely. He would go into the store every morning before coming to the State House. The other thing that he referenced, and that is the fact that he did not have a lot of credentials. He said he thought he was probably the only senator in the entire legislature that did not have a degree, a post-secondary degree. He was a high school graduate. But yet he had a great deal of wisdom and he had a great deal of courage. And certainly no one likes to raise fees and no one likes to raise taxes, but there are times when it's in the overall state interest of the state to do that. The other thing that he did, and it's getting a lot of attention now, and that is the Lamoille Valley Rail Trail. And everybody's seeing the great potential recreation in terms of the economy and the value to the state. And I can tell you, he was one of the leading figure in the Senate for the acquisition of that property. But it was really not easily done. Many people thought it was a waste of money. And so it's interesting. That's another example of seeing something that needed to be done, willing to act on it, even though at the time it wasn't popular. But today, everybody is like saying, what a wonderful decision to acquire that for the benefit of the public. It's a publicly owned asset. And so I think of Senator Mazza and some of the decisions that he made and his willingness to get up and support it. Mm.
Let's talk for a moment about Dick Sears. What was your working relationship with him like?
Well, it was also interesting. I served on transportation for 18 years with Senator Mazza, and I served all the time I was in the Senate on appropriations with Senator Sears. So we spent 20 years, every afternoon we were in session together. And he sat right beside me for many of those years. And so I got to know him. I knew him before I went into legislature because I was Secretary of the Agency of Human Services, and he was a director of a group home for adolescent boys. So there was some contact there. He didn't always agree with some of the decisions, I can tell you, and when he didn't agree, you generally knew it. But underneath it, he was a kind and generous person, and his history was very unique in the sense that he was born in jail. His mother was incarcerated, and he ultimately was adopted as an infant, and that really influenced, I think, his commitment to people who are marginalized, who are experience trouble. And he was a leader in terms of our reform of our justice system, our reliance on incarceration. But he, on the personal side, he loved cruises. He and his wife loved to go on cruises. And when his wife died after an illness, he actually made arrangements to spread her ashes at sea on his last cruise. And so it was so touching because he showed us some of us the video of the ceremony, and it really meant a lot to him, and it meant a lot to us that he would share such a private time in his family's life. The other thing is, of course, with both of them, if you're older, you remember Dick and Jane stories, and so there are many times that we said Dick and Jane held hands and jumped off the cliff when we were making, difficult decisions. And he loved raspberry trifle, and I always made him one for his birthday. So I think you spend a lot of time with your legislative colleagues, and some even more than others, depending on committee assignments. And so it was a real loss to have Senator Sears die so suddenly, because he did intend to run again, but that's not how it turned out for him.
Let's take a moment to listen to his voice, shall we? This is a comment that Dick Sears made at the beginning of the 2024 legislative session, and he was talking about creating programs that are an alternative to incarceration.
Holding people accountable is the key. You don't necessarily have to incarcerate somebody to hold them accountable. For example, enter into drug treatment. And if they don't, then there may be other more serious consequences.
That was Dick Sears speaking about reforming the carceral system and finding new ways to help people who might find themselves in it. Jane Kitchell, retired state senator, thank you so much for helping us remember Dick Sears and Dick Mazza today.
Well, thank you for offering me the opportunity.
Well, let's go back to the phones. We have other people in our region calling in to remember somebody whose life they want to remember from 2024. Michael in Windsor is up next. Michael, who are you thinking about today?
Hello, Michaela. I was thinking about Forrest Hammond. Most people call him Frosty Hammond. He lived in Heartland, and he was the Vermont Fish and Wildlife black bear biology team leader. And so he had a significant role throughout the state in managing the black bear population. But I knew him mostly from his volunteer work in Windsor on what's now called the Windsor Grasslands wildlife management area. And that was, it used to be the prison. And even while the prison was open, Frosty would organize wildlife habitat improvement projects, the apple tree release there. And it really brought people out to learn about that section of Windsor and get them involved. And the place now, the grasslands is thriving with people walking there, bird watching, running, hunting. And I think that it was due to Frosty Hammond's work in bringing people together. He just had such a great personality, and he was a good storyteller and had a great laugh. And so I hope that people who appreciate wildlife throughout Vermont and in Windsor will remember Frosty Hammond.
Michael, thank you so much for helping us remember Frosty. What a great recollection. Lisa Gannon is our next guest. She is here to tell us about her former colleague, Dr. Michelle Perrin. Lisa, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you, Michaela. Thank you so much.
And Lisa, you're a medical assistant at Timberlane Pediatrics in Burlington, and you worked for 20 years with Dr. Perrin, who died in May of this year. What was Dr. Perrin like with children?
She was really welcoming and warm and funny. She met people where they were. She loved her families. They really connected with her very strongly. They depended on her for so many things. And she, I would say that the families like trusted her with all their problems and their struggles. And they just called her and wanted her advice, you know, and just really valued her expertise in just about everything. Mm.
And especially when you have a newborn, that is such a tender time for parents. And there could be a lot of fear wrapped up in that time, too. You're learning how to take care of a child. You want the best for them, and you might have a little too much access to Google and WebMD. What was Dr. Perrin like with newborns and parents of newborns?
I think she spent as much time as she felt that she needed to with them, and just gave them lots of education and reassurance and empowerment to feel like they could really take great care of that new baby. I think she loved seeing her newborns, especially because as she was a pediatrician for so long that a lot of her patients were older. And sometimes she would say, I need more babies, you know, get me some newborns. Yeah, she was a very special person and a great doctor.
What was the response like from the community at Timberlane Pediatrics after she passed away?
Well, it was very sudden and unexpected, shocking for all of us. And it was very difficult to personally inform all of her hundreds of families, which we did do. And we cried together and laughed together, and lots of people came by and brought flowers and wrote cards to the family. It was really touching. It was quite amazing, actually.
She made a difference in so many families' lives and the lives of so many children. Lisa Gannon, thank you so much for calling in and telling us about Dr. Perrin.
Thank you very much, Michaela. Take care.
Lovers of jazz and blues also lost a legend this spring. I'm talking, of course, about the saxophone player Joe Moore. He was an integral thread in the Vermont music tapestry when he arrived in the state in the early 70s. He was a staple in bands like Blues for Breakfast, and he played with Dave Keller's band. And earlier this year, my colleague Mary Angish spoke to Dave Keller about Moore's musical legacy. Let's take a listen.
I don't know how to say it without swearing, but yeah, I freaking love that guy. I mean, he was a sweetheart. He was like so super, super humble. He would never talk about his accomplishments. He told me that his mom always told him to never talk about yourself. Because I was like, why don't you tell everybody you played with Wilson Pickett and the Isley Brothers and Staple Singers? Why aren't you like letting everybody know that you have the best soul music resume in Vermont? He's like, well, my mother always told me you don't talk about yourself. So people didn't really know. I mean, unless you played with him and you knew him for a while, you wouldn't know the extent of that man's experience. And not only did he play with us, actually played with them in their heyday. We're talking like the mid-1960s, mid to late 1960s, when soul music was at its absolute peak. You know, to be touring around the country playing, you know, the biggest black theaters in the country, playing the circuit, you know, with all these amazing other acts on the bill in the heyday of soul music. I mean, he was just a young guy. He was, you know, in his late teens and early 20s. Really, it's incredible. You know, he also played an incredible penny whistle, too. You know?
Right. The Irish jig songs, yes.
Well, I remember seeing him at Nectar's once. I walked in. It was St. Patrick's Day. And there's Joe Moore on stage playing a reel, you know, an Irish reel on the penny whistle. And that was the moment that it really sunk into me that, okay, even though I'm like a Jewish, you know, white guy from suburban, you know, Massachusetts, I could legitimately attempt to play blues and soul music. If Joe Moore can play Irish music, I guess that gives me license to try to be a blues guy, you know, and a soul guy. So that was a real gift, I felt like. He was open-minded and very supportive. And then he would always come up to me after the shows and be like, Dave, you know, keep doing what you're doing, you know, Dave. You're helping keeping the music alive. You know, it was important to him that the music stayed alive, and he would always give it. You know, we're not even talking 110%; we're talking 200%. And anyone who played with Joe Moore will tell you that. You know, to bring that cultural tradition here to Vermont, that's priceless. We were so lucky to have him.
That was Dave Keller talking about the late saxophonist Joe Moore. You can hear Joe playing the saxophone in this performance with the Dave Keller Band at Vermont Public's Colchester Studio in 2016. Our next guest is Roseanne Greco. She is the president of the board for the South Burlington Land Trust. Its founder, Sarah Dopp, passed away on March 7th of this year. Roseanne, thank you so much for calling in to tell us about Sarah.
Oh, it's my pleasure to talk about Sarah.
What was her vision for the South Burlington Land Trust?
Well, Sarah started it, and her vision was to preserve open lands and farmlands and wildlife habitats that which she said that makes South Burlington so unique. And that was what she, as along with many other activities that Sarah was involved with, but that's what she did for the next 20-some years.
Wow. When did you two first meet? Can you bring us back to that time?
I think it was probably the year 2009. I had just moved here from the Washington, D.C. suburbs the year before, and somehow I saw a flyer or something that Sarah put out about saving a parcel of land that the city at that time was thinking about putting a police station on. And I learned about that, and that's how I first heard about the South Burlington Land Trust and Sarah, and then I started going to some of the meetings, the city meetings, and Sarah was at, she, God bless her, she would attend so many city meetings, city council meetings, planning commission meetings, DRB meetings. Oftentimes she'd be the only person in the audience, and so I joined her, and the two of us used to sit in meetings together, and we did that for another decade or two.
Mm-hmm. What was it like to be around her?
Sarah was the very opposite of me. She was quiet, unaffacing, had a very gentle, kind, I hope I'm kind, but kind of personality. And we were a contrast. I was more outspoken and louder and brasher. Sarah was never that way. She was a very calming, a very calm person, and had a very calming influence on people around her. And me also, if I allowed myself to be open to that.
And Roseanne, I mean, she had such an impact on South Burlington and the land in that area. How will her influence continue to be felt in your community, you think, far into the future?
Well, I think many people are unaware of how much Sarah accomplished. But when they look at land that is open now, it still has fields and wetlands and wildlife, it's because of Sarah. They may not know it, but we calculated how much open land that she, in her efforts in the past 20-some years, is hundreds of acres that she was able to get some kind of zoning or easement on it. So the benefits... what Sarah did benefits everybody. The more open land we have, the cleaner our air, the purer our water, the healthier our biosystem and ecosystems, which we all benefit from and will make us healthier human beings. We owe that to Sarah. We owe a lot of that to Sarah and the others. I mean, Sarah didn't do it by herself. Nobody does these things by themselves. Yeah. But she started an effort. Others joined her. And we're still going strong and trying to continue her legacy.
And then lastly, Roseanne, I'm wondering if you could maybe paint a picture for us of some of that land that Sarah loved so much, what it looks like when you stand and look out on it today.
Oh, gosh. Well, I tell you, for my, and I think anybody that, well, I hope people that go out there, there's a sense of awe when you're out in nature and away from the built environment, and you're able to smell it and feel it and hear it, you know, the wind and the critters making sounds. It rejuvenates your soul. I think we are desperately in need of that. Nature gives us that if we just realize it's there to be enjoyed and not destroyed and not plundered and not to be, you know, a game area or play area for us, but an area to rejuvenate. And so that's what I do. I mean, I never come back from a walk in the woods without feeling better or a walk in the meadows or I just invite other people to do that. If you're feeling low or out of sorts, get out in nature. And that's what we're trying. That's what Sarah wanted to do. That's what we are continuing in the South Burlington Land Trust to do, to preserve those precious areas that keep us healthy, mind and body.
Roseanne Greco, thank you so much for telling us about Sarah Dopp today.
My pleasure. Thank you for asking about her.
Lydia Clemens of Charlotte also devoted her life to nourishing the earth and her family. She was a nurse anesthetist, an art lover, a mother, and the co-owner of the Clemens Family Farm, which is an icon of African-American cultural heritage in this state. When she passed away in August, my colleague Elodie Reed put together this remembrance. Let's listen to an excerpt of it now.
Providing welcome, guidance, and connection to African American culture is something Lydia Clemens did over and over throughout her life. Lydia was born in 1923 in Louisiana. She grew up in Arkansas and excelled as a student in a one-room segregated schoolhouse. Right before Lydia entered high school, her family moved to Illinois. They joined the Great Migration of Black Americans escaping racial violence and discriminatory Jim Crow laws in the South. In the Midwest, Lydia earned a nursing degree from Loyola University in Chicago and then married her husband, Jack Clemens, in 1952. A decade later, the couple bought their nearly 150-acre farm in Charlotte when Jack, a doctor, was offered a position at the University of Vermont. While maintaining the farm's large garden and raising five children, newspaper articles show Lydia becoming involved in her new community. She helped establish the local 4-H chapter and the Charlotte chapter of the Vermont League of Women Voters.
And she was just a joy to have as a neighbor.
This is Joan Braun, who lived next door to Lydia for 45 years.
She taught me how to make slipcover. She taught me how to do that, which is, takes a lot of patience. And she was just very anxious to share her history.
Celebrating African American heritage with the wider community is what the Clemenses ultimately decided to do with their property. A nonprofit led by their daughter purchased it last year, preserving one of the few African American owned farms in Vermont and across the country. Lydia Clemens explained why they wanted this to be their legacy in a video made by the Vermont Historical Society and My Champlain Valley in 2018.
So now it's very important that all races are recognized and respected. And the only way you're going to get some recognition and respect is to have done something positive. So I think from that standpoint, it's very important that we have this in Vermont and in the United States.
That was a remembrance of Lydia Clemens of Charlotte, who passed away earlier this year. We've received a number of emails from you asking us to share a remembrance on air of somebody who you loved and lost in 2024. Chelsea in Barrie wrote to us about her Nana, Louise, who died at the age of 101 in July. She was just an amazing person, Chelsea writes, who was so kind and caring and really independent and also a little bit stubborn and a little bit of a rebel in her own way. She saw so much during her long life. She grew up in rural western Pennsylvania during the Great Depression with no running water or electricity and rode a horse to a one-room schoolhouse. By the time she was in her 90s, she lived in a modern condo and could tell Alexa to turn on the radio. She also proved that you could eat a lot of ice cream and still live to 101. She always made me feel so special and loved, and I miss her so much, but I feel lucky to have had her in my life for so long. And Cheryl wrote to us about her stepfather, Marcel Bowden. He died in March, 4 months after her mother's death at the age of 95. She writes, Marcel was a native Vermonter, a competitive sailor, and a gifted architect. Among his designs is the now iconic boathouse in Burlington. He blended his two passions, sailing and architecture, in the Community Sailing Center on the Burlington waterfront, for which he campaigned tirelessly and to which he devoted endless hours of consultation and design. Marcel designed countless private residences and numerous commercial buildings around the state and across the country. He worked into his early 90s. But what a powerful tapestry of people in our region who have helped shape it for years to come. And even in their absence, their mark on our communities will remain for a long time. Thank you so much to everybody who has contributed to this show. I will hold all of these names with me as I go through my day and into the new year. So thank you for that. That is all the time that we have for Vermont Edition's annual Remembrance Show. Our show is directed by Liz Fullerton, and our managing producer is John Ahrens. Our show is produced by Andrea Lorien and Daniela Fierro. Our call screener today was Rick Barrett, and our theme music was by Myra Flynn. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch up again soon.